Welcome to Cyber Sentries from Paladin Cloud on True Story FM. I'm your host, John Richards. Here we explore the transformative potential of AI for cloud security. As a special treat for this episode, we have a guest host. Dan Deeney, CEO and co-founder of Paladin Cloud, sits down with Mike Crow, retired CIO at Colgate-Palmolive. From artificial intelligence to integrating security and DevOps teams, they discuss the top cybersecurity trends you need to know. Let's dive in with Dan and Mike.
I'm Daniel Deeney, CEO of Paladin Cloud. I'm super excited to have Mike Crow here to join the discussion. Today, we'll be discussing top cybersecurity trends and strategies. Mike, let me turn it over to you for an introduction.
Thanks, Dan, and thanks for having me today. Hi, everybody. I'm Mike Crow. I am a computer scientist out of the University of Delaware. Early in my career, I had a couple of short stints in software engineering for the defense software industry first, and then the healthcare software industry before I landed at Colgate-Palmolive for the next 34 years of my career. All in the information technology organization there, spending the last 9 years as the chief information officer. I retired from my role at Colgate at the end of 2022, and post-retirement, spending some time raising funds for critical pediatric cancer research, as well as I'm a board member or advisor for roughly about half a dozen tech startups, as well as a couple of investment firms.
Love the diverse background. All right, let's jump right in. So first key trend I think would be good to talk about for the audience would be, you know, how do you really see the overall threat landscape sort of evolving?
Well, you know, I think the threat landscape is growing ever more complex for multiple reasons. First, as all companies continue along the path of their digital transformation, their digital landscapes are expanding very broadly. You know, we're seeing an explosive number of SaaS applications that people are using. We're seeing companies do more of their own organic software development in the cloud, and that's leveraging open source microservices and open APIs. So the risk surface is really expanding dramatically. You know, we've got more digital moving parts that people need to be concerned about and protect. We've got a heavily increasing number of applications and a heavily increasing number of identities. I think the second reason it's growing quite complex is the geopolitical instability that we're seeing around the world. You know, with all of that unrest, we're seeing nation states take advantage of an ever increasing number of identified vulnerabilities. And whether you think you're a target of those nation states or not, you have potential that you could get caught up in collateral damage from any kind of nation state attack. So it's important to pay attention to those. And then just whether it's a nation state attack or attacks in general, the attacks are just getting more and more complex. And so all of this is keeping security teams as well as the adjacent IT teams quite busy.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, with these increasingly complex, you know, threat vectors and attack patterns, certainly it becomes a much more daunting task for CISOs and security teams. You know, what would be an example of a threat that's sort of top of mind for CISOs today?
Well, I don't know if I can speak for all CISOs in all industries, but I can certainly talk about what worried me when I was a CIO. And what worried me were the threats or the attacks that could lead to significant disruption of business operations or significant financial loss to the company. So a couple of examples in those spaces would be ransomware, which provides both disruption as well as potential financial loss, and B2B payment fraud. Now, and of course, at the root of all of those attacks, they could have all started with the first attack, which would be compromising somebody's credentials, getting into your environment and starting to move laterally. Those were the things that worried me. So I would spend a lot of time focusing on how do we make sure those types of things don't happen to us. You know, fortunately, with the innovation happening in space, you know, there were some answers for that. And just, you know, bringing up a few examples, Area 1 security was great at making sure it was keeping phishing emails out of your environment. And it's now part of Cloudflare. You know, more recently, a couple of startups that I'm advising, one by the name of Savvy, which has a platform with playbooks for different situations to help security teams. You know, they are great at stopping people from providing their credentials to the bad guys in real time. Another example, another company that I'm advising, Trust Me, is really providing better than ever capability to avoid any kind of fraudulent business to business or B2B payments.
Yeah, those are great examples for sure. Let's talk about AI, a topic that's on the minds of everyone, it seems like, these days. And, you know, we've got the emergence of AI-powered enterprise applications. So how do we think about, you know, securing these applications and data?
Yeah, well, I think with AI and including the emergence of generative AI most recently, it presents both risks as well as benefits to a security organization. So for now, let me concentrate on the risks, and I think we'll get to the benefits as we go through some more of our chat today. But think back to when prior digital capabilities were developing. You know, think back to email systems coming to the forefront and personal computers and the emergence of the World Wide Web. You know, all of those capabilities were ahead of the industry's ability to protect against accidental or intentional misuse of those capabilities. And of course, then what came along was the emergence of an entire cybersecurity software industry. You know, I think back to those days, and I think that's where we are with AI, you know, generally right now, maybe a little bit oversimplistically, but I think that's where we are right now. The capabilities are ahead of the industry's ability to protect against that accidental or intentional misuse. And so we're going to need a whole new branch of cybersecurity capabilities to help us in that regard. They are starting to emerge, but I think that they're going to need to continue to emerge as companies really start to take advantage of these great capabilities. You know, just citing, you know, one specific example, think about when ChatGPT came onto the market, came on somewhat by surprise to many, with much fanfare and much well-deserved hype. But I think it caught a lot of companies, you know, off guard in that they had to think through what are the implications for us, including what are the risks? You know, what's the risk of us leaking some of our valuable data through the use of this capability? What kind of guardrails do we need? How do we protect against, you know, the misuse that could come from that capability? And so what did a lot of companies do right out of the gate? They actually blocked the use of ChatGPT for their employees. You know, one of those companies I talked about before, Savvy and their playbooks, what they were able to do was quickly develop a playbook so that their customers could catch in real time when their employees were about to use ChatGPT. And then they could enforce making sure that the users had the right privacy settings set for that use of ChatGPT, or they could be proactive about publishing at that, again, in real time at that point in time, you know, the policies and the do's and don'ts of the company. So emergence of some good capability, providing those guardrails, which is a much better solution than blocking the capability altogether.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, definitely need those guardrails in place. Another emerging trend that we're starting to see with enterprises and AI-powered applications is the use of open source LLMs, like Llama, for example. Any thoughts on the emerging trend of open source?
Yeah, I think for companies that are really looking to take advantage of generative AI, you know, in a fast way and in a safe way, the emergence of the open source, the open APIs is going to be critically important. You know, as I mentioned before, right, companies have a lot of valuable proprietary data at their disposal that they don't want to just release, right? So they don't want that to be exposed by use of proprietary LLMs, you know, that you would see from OpenAI or from Google or from others. You know, rather, they want to be able to create their own private LLM for that valuable proprietary data that they have, making sure that they're protecting that data while then also leveraging, though, the open APIs to the functionality, right, to the algorithms, to then be able to produce valuable generative AI applications for both internal and external use. The internal use for helping internal employees with their jobs, with their productivity, and the external use being able to provide, you know, new products and services that they haven't been able to provide before using generative AI to their customers.
That makes sense. So you're all great points for sure. We'll keep monitoring that trend. So yeah, let's kind of shift gears. I mean, one of the key trends that we're starting to see, you know, with the increasing threat landscape is that enterprises are looking to kind of beef up their defenses and kind of overall posture. When you sort of think about kind of the full stack applications, you know, data security, cloud security, what are some of the key trends and strategies there?
Well, I think most CISOs, if not all CISOs, have for a long time been adding a large array of best of breed capability into their cybersecurity arsenal. And I think that's appropriate. If there's any area today that deserves best of breed deployment, it is cybersecurity. And that's a reflection of the importance. There's just too much at stake. It's a reflection of the complexity, you know, in that particular area. And to your point, right, the complexity continues to grow for the reasons that we talked about before. So more and more solutions are needed. You know, with that said, deploying all of those different solutions adds complexity for the security team. So I think one thing CISOs are always looking for is, how can I simplify? You know, how can I simplify the landscape? But it needs to be simplification without giving up capability, right? Simplification while you're also advancing the capability and moving the needle forward. So you could get that simplification from consolidation of capabilities within the industry. But I think more likely today, this simplification is coming from additional solutions introduced into the environment that integrate well with the solutions that are already in place and correlate the data and the signals across all of those existing solutions.
And you know, to that point, you know, when you sort of think about, you know, the different signals and alerts, one of the trends that we're starting to see is risk-based, you know, prioritization kind of across tools. Any thoughts on that trend?
Well, you know, I think with a lot of what we've talked about so far, Dan, you know, the bottom line here is that security teams are busier than ever before, and they were too busy to begin with. You know, I think that aspect of prioritization is absolutely key for them, and automation behind the prioritization as well. You know, that's what I like about your solution in Paladin Cloud, which you incorporate into the environment. It integrates well with a lot of those existing security solutions that we've talked about. It automates the, you know, the task of collecting data and signals from across those various solutions. It automates using generative AI risk-based scoring to then give CISOs and their security teams real-time insights on the risks that exist, but more importantly, the priorities that they should be going after. What should they be working on first, second, third? You know, what are the things that could wait because maybe there's some mitigating controls in place? These are things that probably every security team is doing one way or another, but in a lot of cases, it may be through manual efforts, and that automation that you're providing to get to that prioritization faster and to get to that trust is absolutely key for this increasingly complex environment.
Well, yeah, when you kind of shift gears to kind of remediation, if you kind of think about, okay, you know, let's figure out the best way to prioritize, and then, you know, how do we drive remediation in an efficient way? And automation comes to mind, you know, workflow and processes. And in many cases, you know, with global organizations or enterprises, you may have a decentralized kind of org structure and different levels and tiers. So how do you see sort of, you know, that remediation process evolving, and kind of what's the role of automation there?
It's a really good follow-on question to, you know, the previous topic as well. You know, and I think for all the same reasons, automated remediation and automation in general is critically important. Now, you know, it could be in the past that CISOs or some security teams, you know, may have been reluctant to let automated remediation just happen. I do think that that is likely changing for a couple of reasons. One, again, for all the reasons that we talked about, I think it's just becoming absolutely necessary. You know, that the second point is that I think the tooling is making it much easier for CISOs and their teams to trust the automated remediation. because the tooling is providing explainability as to why the automation is making decisions that it's making. And it's giving the security teams a chance to walk before they run. You know, we talked about the automation in your platform around bringing the data feeds in and the automation of the analysis and then providing the advice, you know, to the security teams. But you also have automated remediation at your platform, if not completely automated, at least giving the security teams a chance to, with one click, do remediation. You know, that's really important for some of the same reasons that we talked about before. There's too much work. We need more productivity. We need more tools like that to help the security teams. If I can bring up one more example, when it comes to automation, one of the companies I had talked about before, TrustMe. TrustMe is also integrating into existing enterprise solutions, not just security solutions, but your ERPs and, you know, and other enterprise solutions, and using APIs to read data where it exists, and then using advanced algorithms, AI algorithms, to detect potential B2B payment fraud in progress and prevent that fraud. You know, these algorithms are so sophisticated that they are providing either zero or very few false positives, which in my experience, I think that's really rare, you know, in this cyber industry. So very powerful algorithms providing better protection against B2B payment fraud than ever seen before. And again, you know, similar to comments before, you know, companies may be handling that B2B payment fraud through manual processes today. You know, what this automation from TrustMe does is it makes that prevention more foolproof, and then also provides productivity back to, in this case, the financial organization.
Yeah, that's a great example for sure. One of the things that we're starting to see is the emergence of ticketing systems playing a key role, especially with DevOps teams. So we're starting to see, you know, Jira, you know, instances, you know, Jira projects. And any thoughts around how do you streamline through like a tool like a Jira, your workflow and automation there with different teams that are in different geos?
Yeah, I think that's really important. Right? You, if you think about most large companies, you know, they're going to be geographically dispersed. Even within a single country, you know, they're going to be between different facilities. But then when you get to large multinational companies, you've got people all around the world, and that can even include parts of the security team, parts of the IT team, and so on. And, you know, I think you know that when it comes to addressing a threat, an attack, an incident, it's never contained just inside the security team. The actions are never contained just inside the security team. There's a lot of communication that has to go on between teams, between the security team and other parts of IT, as well as teams in the greater enterprise. And there's tasks to be done that, you know, may belong to the security team or may not belong to the security team. So there's a whole coordination that has to happen here in terms of response when you're trying to address these things. And of course, you want all that to happen accurately, and you want it to happen as fast as possible because you're trying to burn down that risk. And so with all that communication involved, with all those different steps, you know, that have to happen, a ticketing system like Jira or something else to automate that human workflow is absolutely critical for speed and accuracy.
Yeah. So shifting gears to organizations, how they're set up and structured, you know, we hear from CISOs that, hey, look, you know, we've got a DevOps team that focuses on remediation and fixing things. And the CISO security group generally, you know, identifies and tries to prioritize, and we use different tools and dashboards, you know, whether it's application security, data security, cloud security, vulnerability management, right? Lots of different tools and platforms, lots of different lists and priorities. And oftentimes, you know, when they're speaking to their counterparts over in DevOps, you know, it's like, okay, well, there's, you know, 5,000, you know, findings and alerts here that we need to remediate. And DevOps will oftentimes say, look, tell me the top 50 that you want me to work on. I don't have any more resources than that. Yeah. So how do these two teams ultimately sort of collaborate like within an organization to help reduce risk?
Yeah, you bring up some really good points there. And so, you know, first off, it's critically important for the security teams and the DevOps teams to be very tightly integrated today. If that's not the case, then, you know, I would say something needs to change quickly. You know, and they have roles to play. That, you know, the security team, they need to be setting the expectations, right? They need to be doing the education to the DevOps teams on best practices and the expectations on how things should be done. They also need to be doing the monitoring and the detecting when things are falling outside of those parameters, outside of those policies, and risks are starting to emerge. The DevOps team needs to take all that education seriously, and they need to be responsive to the security team. So, they do need to burn down that risk that the security team is advising. Now you bring up a good point in that they could be feeling overwhelmed for a lot of the reasons that we've talked about, because they're trying to add capability to the business. And the security team wants them to address that long list of things. So I think an important point for both the leaders of security and DevOps is to provide the right tooling. And I would say a lot of this tooling exists and continues to emerge, but provide the right tooling for the DevOps teams to get things done the right way from the start, right? If you provide that capability, then that improves the productivity of both teams. And there's less of that chasing things after the fact, right? Less of that long list of things to attack after the fact. It's easier said than done, but I think these are key things. And the final thing that I would add about the two teams working together is you need empathy created on both sides of that equation. And I think a good way to create that empathy between the two teams is cross-functional assignments. Take some of your DevOps people and put them on a security team for some period of time. Take some of your security people and put them on the DevOps team for some point of time. That really is a great way of each side gaining that empathy for what the others are up against.
Love that idea. Great idea on cross-functional teams and really generating empathy for sure. I mean, one of the trends that's still early that we see is the emergence of kind of a hybrid bridge team, like a DevSecOps type team. So do you think we'll start to see that role sort of expand and grow in organizations?
I think we will see it grow. I do think we'll accelerate that. It's always a tough choice to make when you're talking about making organizational changes. And is it necessary to make the organizational change or just have the teams work together? Of course, I've talked about the importance of the teams working tightly together. But one way to do that is through, some organizational consolidation as well. I think in any event, whichever way you go after it, I don't think there's a right or wrong in terms of the approach, as long as you keep the objective in mind, right? And again, I would come back to, I think the objective you need to keep in mind is that you're trying to improve the efficiency and that productivity of both teams. And you're trying to get to where things are being done right the first time rather than having to react with remediation after the fact.
Yeah, that's a great point. Oftentimes you kind of see this tug of war where security is focused on risk. DevOps might be more aligned, let's say, with the business unit and servicing and supporting customers, keeping operations, keeping uptime on platforms. And then, a lot of times a security issue that requires remediation will impact let's say the uptime, on a web platform, and, and if there's a risk, like a port open to the public or something, that, it's like, okay, well, do we take down our application for a period of time, or do we push it to a maintenance window? How do we balance, risk versus, business continuity and supporting, customer revenue generating, platforms? So that there's always that sort of that trade-off.
Yeah, all great examples.
Well, look, we've covered a lot of material today. It would be great to sort of get your final thoughts overall and any key trends and strategies we haven't talked about or discussed, and as we kind of wrap up in the next few minutes.
Yeah, maybe one thing I'll just close with is something that I talk about often. We've talked a lot about different aspects of cyber security here today, and in my time as a CIO, I studied a lot of breaches across companies and across industries. And one common thread that I always latched onto through all of those studies was that companies often got burned by what they didn't know. They thought they knew everything. They thought they had all the right things in place, but they got burned by something that they didn't know. Some simple examples, it could have been that they thought everybody had multi-factor authentication enabled throughout the organization, But then as they were studying what happened in a particular breach, they realized that there was an exception. And it's the exceptions that kill you. And, you know, somebody was got their credentials compromised. They started to move laterally through the network. That's what led to problems. You know, again, just one example. Another example could be that companies could have thought they had burned down a whole bunch of technical debt and decommissioned systems. And then when they were investigating, you know, a particular breach, they found out that a legacy system had been left in place, nobody using it, but it was still up and running. It was compromised, and it was a foot in the door for attackers to get in there. So what I'm always asking is, how do we find out what we don't know? Because what we don't know is what's going to kill us. Now, there are technologies, products, cybersecurity products that help you with that. We talked about a number of them here today. There's a long list of additional, you know, product capability that can help you automate finding out, you know, what you don't know. I think equally, if not more important, is services. You know, if companies are not utilizing these types of services today, I would recommend they do. And what I'm talking about is first class, top notch, offensive minded, offensive skilled, capabilities to test your defenses and turn them loose on trying, to test your defenses. Don't expect the report to come back clean. If that report comes back clean, I would say you probably need to go find another top notch firm to redo those tests of your defenses. And don't be afraid to see that report when it comes back. It could be a long list of things, and you could be quite surprised at what you're finding out by going through that exercise, by finding the things that you don't know. It doesn't matter if that's a long list of things, right? What matters is the objective of the exercise was for you to find out what you don't know, so that then you can systematically prioritize the hottest things to go after and burn down that risk all the way until you got it all whittled away, because you want to address those things you don't know before somebody else finds out what you don't know, the bad guys find out what you don't know, and use that to attack your environment.
Wow, that, yeah, great words of wisdom there, Mike, for sure. Appreciate that perspective and advice and guidance. Look, as we wrap up here, look, really wanted to thank you for sharing your insights and perspective, Mike, and your experience. So thank you so much for taking the time.
My pleasure, Dan. Thanks again for having me.
This podcast is made possible by Paladin Cloud, an AI-powered prioritization engine for cloud security. DevOps and security teams often struggle under the massive amount of notifications they receive. Reduce alert fatigue with Paladin Cloud. Using generative AI, our model risk scores and correlates findings across your existing tools, empowering teams to identify, prioritize, and remediate the most important security risks. If you'd like to know more, visit paladincloud.io. Thank you for tuning in to Cyber Centuries. I'm your host, John Richards. This has been a production of True Story FM. Audio engineering by Andy Nelson. Music by Amit Sagi. You can find all the links in the show notes. We appreciate you downloading and listening to this show. Take a moment and leave a like and review. It helps us get the word out. We'll be back May 8th, right here on Cyber Centuries.